bass drops, you know what time it is. It's time for DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming. It's many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, but I am not joined by my usual co-host this week. No, this week DLC is dealing with the lack of Christian. Luckily, I picked up that red phone that I had installed in my office specifically for this purpose. And I called up my buddy, friend of the show, and still the one and only member of the DLC Five Timers Club, Garnett on Games' own, Garnett Lee.
Hey, guys, I'm going to be a little dry and funny today, and I have some jokes for you later.
What's his character just dropped out of my head?
The Vita is really great too. Yeah. I'm using it right now to play a game.
You got to play Mark Edding from marketing.
Awesome, so good.
Good impression. We're running a little bit. We're running a little bit on the seat of our pants this week. It's Labor Day. Christian has been pulled away from us. We got some technical issues with the show this week, so I'm going to be doing the drops live. It's all fun, but we couldn't not do DLC Labor Day weekend. We got lots to talk about, and DLC is your downloadable Kanata. As I mentioned, it's already depending on Lee to come through, but this week, DLC also means divisions, leagues, and conferences, because we've got sports gaming expert and host of the Press Row podcast joining us, Mr. Rich Grisham. Welcome, Rich.
If there was a podcasting Hall of Fame, you, Jeff Kanata, and you, Garnett Lee, would both be enshrined, and I would be walking through it and looking at both of your busts and saying, man, if I could do a show with those guys one day, that would be amazing. And here I am doing it. This is fantastic. I'm so excited to be here.
Rich, you're looking at our busts. Little did you know. Look, my eyes are up here, Rich. My eyes are up here. Don't look at my bust.
There actually is one, Rich. It's in Muncie, and it's out behind the Stop and Go on Route 3.
It's not so much a bust as it is a styrofoam cup with a smiley face drawn on it for each of us. But, we'll take what we can get.
I am excited. Thanks for having me.
We love having you on. Rich, of course, was part of our big NFL tailgate back in the Weekend Confirmed days and wiped the floor with us. So that was fun. It's Speak NFL week. Yourself. I'm ready for some football.
Oh, man.
I'm sure you guys are ready for some football. We'll be talking Madden because Rich has played a ton of it. But I also just because on Sunday we've got my 49ers taking on Garnett's Dallas Cowboys. I want Rich Grisham, impartial expert, to tell us who's going to win that game.
Tough call.
I could go off the board. I could try to invent reasons why Dallas could somehow win the game. But, I mean, you know, let's face it. The Niners are the class of the league. This is no contest. Sorry, Garnett.
Quite all right. I'm just looking for CJ Spillman to make a couple of big special teams tackles.
Yeah, we got problems, man. We got all kinds of people getting suspended and
that's
having
true.
It's a little inside football for you there, Jeff. C.J. Spillman was your one-time special teams ace who the Niners decided for some reason to waive.
Get rid of.
And the Cowboys picked him up.
Yeah, it stings. Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk NFL despite how much we want to. We are here to talk games, and we have a huge week. PAX happened. Dragon Con happened. We got the beginning of TGS with Sony's pre-TGS announcements this early morning. So we're going to start, as we always do, with story of the week. However, we don't have the story of the week drop, so I'm going to have to do it live, guys. Here we go. Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week. All right.
Well executed. Done.
Well executed.
Rich, you are our guest. The story of the week is the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. As a listener of the show, you guys can always submit stories for us to consider using the hashtag DLCSOTW or using our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5by5DLC. Got a lot of submissions this week. As I said, a bunch of news. But Rich, as our guest, you get first pick. So what would you say is your story of the week?
You know, I actually am relatively new to loving Nintendo. I've in the past had Nintendo consoles, obviously had the NES when I was a kid, had the Wii and the GameCube. But I have a seven-year-old son, and over the last couple of years, the Nintendo platforms have taken much more of a front and center in my life. And my son and I play a lot of Nintendo games. We play a lot of Mario Kart 8, for example, and play our 3DS and 2DS. So if this were a few years ago, I wouldn't even think about it. But seeing the new 3DS and the new 3DS XL announcements, to me, that is clearly the story of the week. Because these machines, I know a lot of people like to give Nintendo flack for confusing the marketplace and, you know, with their naming conventions and, you know, extending platforms that may need to be replaced. But as somebody who has a 3DS and a 2DS, the new ones coming out kind of look really enticing so that I can maybe pass my older one down to my son and get a nice shiny new one for myself. So for me, that is clearly the story of the week.
Well, that was submitted by several people, including at @PDX_geek on the Twitters. I don't know about passing it on. It sounds like the old 3DS might be garbage at this point. We've got some interesting, you know, alongside this announcement, which is pretty exciting and interesting. Alongside it, they also announced that Xenoblade Chronicles is coming for 3DS, new 3DS. Yes. And it ain't going to work on your old 3DS. So We already are dividing the market a little bit. Garnet, what's your take on new 3DS and new 3DS XL?
Classic Nintendo. I mean, you don't even have to predict it anymore. Excuse me. You don't even have to predict it anymore. Because, I mean, look, they have a track record for doing this. Now, they've never segregated out the hardware like this. And so that's a bit of a twist. Definitely love the way it looks. It's going to catch people right off the bat. Although that right-hand analog nubby thing, yeah. Did you see that? I mean,
the little C stick. They're comparing
it's
it to
not
the
even
GameCube.
A C stick this time. I mean, it looks like a half of a pencil eraser just sort of thrown up at the top right hand. It's like such a weird. It's like if you're going to include
dual sticks,
it,
bro. Dual sticks. Now we got dual sticks.
Yeah, but if you're going to include it, you've got to include it better. I think that SR7, you know, is sort of onto something about it being a slap in the face to current 3DS owners. And it'll be a big sense of how well does that play out over the next year or two. I mean, this has been their hold them together platform, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the handheld space has been what's kept them afloat, not afloat, because that kind of implies that they would have sunk otherwise, but that's what's kept them at the top of conversation. It's been where their best games have been. Obviously, you have Super Smash coming out here shortly in that. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that does on handheld, because I always think of that as like a big screen experience, especially for multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's step down through what this new 3DS, literally called the new 3DS, will be. It's got a slightly larger screen. It's got, as you mentioned, that new C-Stick, which is their right-handed little analog controller. It has NFC built in instead of needing that NFC thing that they were saying they're going to sell in order to make those amiibo figures work with the current 3DSs. You won't need that extra peripheral. It'll work. You just plop the amiibo right there on the bottom screen of your new 3DS, and it'll bring your information into Super Smash Brothers, which is pretty cool, I think. It's got a micro SD slot. That's pretty awesome. It's got a longer battery life, which was one of the biggest gripes about the 3DS. It's going
yes.
massive upgrade from 3.5 hours up to 6 hours, they say. And it's got this ability, which is interesting to me. I really want to try, which is supposedly making that gripe that we all had with the first 3DS, that when the 3D is on, if you shake your hand in any way, you kind of want to throw up because the 3D goes wonky. Supposedly now, that's not going to be as much of a problem. It's got a much wider angle of 3D compatibility with your eyeballs. So I want to try that because I actually am one of the few people that I know that loves having the 3D on in my games. And
you know, I always get have a problem with certain games when I shake the thing. I go, hey, hey, hey. And if that works, I think that alone might make me want to get one of these.
Well, yeah, I mean, the what gets me is the battery life. I do a lot of traveling, and the 3DS, and I have a 3DS XL and a 2DS. My son uses that a lot. Neither of the of those have solid battery life. And so for me, all that other stuff sounds great, but being able to double my time playing it is really appealing. And I understand what some people are where some people are coming from when they say this is a slap to the face of 3DS owners, but I kind of look at it very much the other way. The 3DS has such a deep library of great games, and so many that I still have yet to discover. To me, buying another 3DS, I mean, this is a machine that I'll probably use for 3, 4, 5 years. I just think that it allows people who like these games to really extend the life of them. Because, you know, especially if you're like me and you travel a lot, my 3DS gets beat up pretty badly. And, you know, I know a lot of people go above and beyond to take care of their stuff, and I try to as well. But, you know, these things get banged around, dented, beaten, and bruised. So for all of those reasons, I don't view it as a slap to the face. I just view it as, hey, now here's another way for me to play new games and old games for longer than I would have.
Even with the separation, though, of the new, more powerful processor in it, because that's sort of the thing that steps out from their normal program of upgrades. Like, typically, they mm-hmm. maintain backward compatibility throughout a line up to a point. But here, they've sort of maintained it but not maintained it and have a sort of, like, very gray line there.
Yeah, that's the strangest part for me, too, is that you're going to have to see on the back of software only compatible with new 3DS. And it's like, well, yeah. I just got my 3DS last week. It's kind of new. You know, it's like it's very potentially confusing to the audience.
Yeah. I was also partially surprised that they kept a smaller form factor one. I mean, so they've got the LL, which is the new XL.
Right.
They also have the standard size. And that was sort of like, well, why do you still make the standard size? Considering that the pricing difference is not that great.
I think it's like $50.
Yeah,
difference between the two. I think it's like 130 and 180. I could have that wrong, but the thing to me that is, you know, it's I'm surprised that they didn't initially announce a Super Smash Brothers bundle for this. Like, it just makes sense. It feels like it's the Super Smash Brothers 3DS. It is compatible with your Amiibo figures. It feels like it's built into that new infrastructure that Nintendo is going to be trying to build with these figurines across multiple platforms and across multiple games, which I think is a really smart thing to double down on. And if they can get the market to think of Nintendo as the toy slash adorable figurines slash all our games work with that company, and it's this ecosystem across a lot of different kinds of titles, I think that could be a huge win for them. And making this device integrated into that initially, I think it's smart. You just make this when you tell the customer, when you go out to buy Super Smash Brothers on 3DS, buy it with this bundle. I think that's the message.
Remember, Jeff, this is coming out in October in Japan, but has no announced plans for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen until 2015. So it means that this holiday, Nintendo is going to be selling old 3DS everywhere else in the world.
Right.
Which is even stupider. Well, for them, it's probably smart because they're going to clear all that warehouse that they have filled with product, and it probably has a higher profit margin for them. But it definitely burns anybody who hops in this fall.
Yeah, and you drop
on the back of Smash Brothers. It's on the back of Smash Brothers. You just bought a new 3DS. Oh, by the way, your new 3DS isn't the new 3DS anyway. It's an old 3DS, but it's right. The only one we'll sell you because you're a dumb American.
Yeah. And then they drop a game like Xenoblade Chronicles, or I'm assuming other games that are going to be released that need this faster processor, and all of a sudden the new 3DS you bought isn't new enough to support those things. So it's frustrating. I think it's a really exciting product. It's a product I'm personally very excited. I'm glad I've been teasing myself with the idea of buying an XL for a long time now, and I'm glad I didn't jump in before now, because now I have an excuse to actually get an XL.
Well, and what happens, what becomes of the 2DS?
Yeah, Rich, you said you have one of those, right?
Yeah, we have a 2DS. My son plays it all the time, and it's great. I really like it. It's another great extension. And again, I see people in the chat talking about how, you know, there's too many products and things like that. But the 2DS is such a niche little thing. It's great for smaller kids. It can You know, you don't have the fold up, you know, that you have with the 3DS. And it's weird too, because they don't even identify the 2DS as a 2DS. Everything, you know, all the software and the operating system is all the 3DS. So it's constantly referring to itself as the 3DS. So it's kind of a strange little hybrid, but I'm so glad they made it, because it has been a great way for my son to play video games. And of course, I still get to keep my 3DS. The other thing that surprised me about this announcement was that I was really expecting, when the next new Nintendo product launched, particularly if it were a handheld, that there would be integration, direct integration with the Wii U, very similar to how, and I'm playing the part of Christian Spicer now, the Vita is amazing for remote play with the PS4. I really expected some more, and there still may be, right? They just because they haven't announced it doesn't mean it couldn't happen. But I was really hoping that there was going to be more of a way to use the Wii U and the new 3DSs in ways that they haven't explored yet. Because, again, I think both platforms are terrific on their own, and combined together, that could really be a boon, not only for people who love playing the games, but also just for Nintendo to sort of get out of they're stuck in neutral with their, you know, sales and their profits.
Yeah. Speaking of Christian, he did text me when he was aware that he wasn't going to be on today. He texted me he said, "Here's my two cents. New 3DS is cool, but named horribly." And then he wrote in all caps, "Horribly."
So, yeah. If they had called it the Super 3DS or something like that, I think it would have been a much better name. I
3DS
wish I could take
you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No. No, 3DS you, bro.
Before I get to Garnet's story of the week, I do want to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. I'm always excited when Squarespace sponsors the show, because I happen to personally use Squarespace. I love it. I've used it for years and years and years. It's the easiest way to have any kind of online site. You can make a portfolio, a blog, even a store. They have commerce, which is super easy to use. Amazingly gorgeous designs that are easy to modify and make your own, so that your website isn't a cookie cutter like everybody else's. It's all drag and drop. What you see is what you get. It could not be easier. You need no programming experience. Although if you do have programming experience, you're able to edit it that way as well. But it's all just drag and drop. It's easy to update. Really beautiful. And if you ever run into any problems, they do have 24/7 support through live chat and email. It's inexpensive. Plans start at only $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. The online shop integration is super easy. It's just plug and play. Just drop it in. Every site comes with one, an online store. So if you have any reason to sell anything, Squarespace is the way to go. The best part of their deal is that they will hook you up with a free trial, and you don't even have to enter your credit card information. You get to try out their service without any commitment whatsoever. If you forget that you tried it, you don't get automatically charged because you never gave them their credit card information. They're that confident about their service that they'll let you try it for free, not just for kind of free. And we urge you to try it using our promo code. If you go to squarespace.com/DLC and use the promo code Jeff sent me, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. And you show support for DLC, you make our show possible, and you encourage them to continue sponsoring, which we really appreciate. It is really one of the best services online for any reason to have a site. I use jeffcanada.com. I use Squarespace to create that, to update that. I couldn't be happier with it. I've used it for, God, 8 years now, and they keep upgrading their service. They keep adding new features, and I am thoroughly satisfied. Squarespace.com/DLC, and use that promo code Jeff sent me. That's very important. Jeff sent me at squarespace.com/DLC.
Hey, I want to also mention, Jeff, Squarespace also sponsors the Press Row podcast, and I use Squarespace along with a friend of the show, TJ Lowerman, to create the PressRowPodcast.com website. Everything you say is completely true. It is a great service, so I want to back that up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's wonderful to have somebody support the show that I actually use their service. I have used it for years and years. I didn't just start using it because they sponsored us. They are an actual service that I adore, and it sounds like you do as well.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. So, Garnet.
Yes.
What would you say is your story of the week?
Yeah. So story of the week is always such a challenge, right? Because it's the what does your brain tell you is the big story of the week? And what does your heart tell you is the story that actually got you excited, right?
I want to hear so your heart. Heart.
You want to hear my heart?
I want to hear what your heart has to say.
Let me hear your heartbeat. My heart beats to Yakuza, and it always has beat to Yakuza. So while I, it's really funny because here we are in the week leading up to the Tokyo Game Show. And you remember how Tokyo Game Show, I mean, it's such a continuing, you know, a continuing show of how the world has changed and how much it's just not what it used to be. Because, you know, we're going up to TGS, and I'm sure that many Western sites will send people over to cover it and so forth. But in contrast to Gamescom, which we saw just a few short weeks ago, this is not going to be the show that dazzles you with a million announcements and all kinds of cool new information and things that get you super excited about your console like it used to be. There will be a trickle of things, and rightfully, many of them will be oriented to the Japan domestic market, which is, by the way, it is the Tokyo Game Show.
Right.
And one of them is Yakuza 0, which we already don't have Yakuza 5 coming to the West. So the chances of Yakuza 0 coming to the West are likely slim to none, which is very disappointing. You know, Yakuza, one of my very, very, very favorite franchises in the world. And it's disappointing to see its struggles in trying to come to the West because it is such a fantastically crafted set of games and such a cool world in which to play, especially as a foreigner, because it's, you know, it even has like that extra layer of unique atmosphere that you're not accustomed to. It's not just a gangster game. It's a gangster game taking place in a completely different societal structure. And so, you know, it just has new layers of interest. They're taking the series back to 1988.
How cool is that?
Oh, it's really cool. They're going back to the early days of Kazuma and when he and Goro were badasses. And if you know the story of those two and how they eventually split up, I mean, this should be like a really cool era to go back and explain or not, you know, explore in the Yakuza world.
Yeah, that sounds like
one day I'll be lucky enough to have time on my hands and be able to learn Japanese so I can play this.
Right. Well, you mentioned the fact that there isn't a ton of game reveals at TGS anymore, but Sony kind of brought a lot of new surprises to the table in their pre-TGS conference that actually happened in the early hours this morning, our time. Not only
you're thinking of Biohazard 2 or Biohazard Revelations 2.
Yeah, and Persona 5, which got a lot of people all hot and bothered.
Also coming to PS4, which will get a lot of people very pleased.
Yeah, a new Wise RPG, a new Hot Shots Golf.
Jeff. Ease.
Ease. I know. It's because 12-year-old me read it as Wise back in the day, and I always did that. Yes, I'm not 12 anymore. Anyway,
like a song lyric that you hear that you think is one thing and something else, you never really think it's the right lyric. It's always what you have.
Excuse me
head.
While I kiss this guy. right. Anyway, so there's, you know, these several big, huge Japanese franchises. Now, tell me how to pronounce Disgaea. Disgaea? Disgaea.
Yes.
Disgaea. Excuse me while I kiss Disgaea.
Disgaea.
Disgaea 5, that's also exciting for people. We're getting a pink and white Vita. So that's a thing. And for me, the big news of the pre-TGS Sony conference is a firm release date for Bloodborne. Unfortunately, it's February 5th, which means February is officially got too many awesome things in it. Too many. February is going to be a cluster of the most... I mean, Witcher's coming out. That already is accounting for 100 hours of my February. So I don't know how Bloodborne is going to fit in. And there's like 12 other games that are all been pushed to February. It's craziness.
Well, was the Bloodborne announcement, by the way, was that a international release or was it just a Japan release? I haven't followed through on all the news.
I think it's an international release, but you could have me caught without that for sure. I think it's an international release, though.
Using the power of the internet, I will check this out.
Yeah, check that out. I'm sure the chat room will be ahead of both of us on that. But Also, the interesting stuff about theming your...
No news on when it'll launch internationally. It's a Japan release date.
Oh, well, I guess I can't get too excited then, but I can't imagine it'll be that much later. Anyway, theming your dashboard on your PS4 and your Vita, you guys think that's cool? What do you think, Rich?
Well, I do love my Vita, and I'm not big on the themes, but I mean, any attention that Sony gives to the Vita to me is a good thing, because I have it, I love it, I play games on it constantly. I tend nowadays to play mostly PS Plus games just because there's so many that you can play on that thing and never buy anything else. So what the theme specifically, no big deal, but just Sony recognizing the Vita, talking about it, giving people that have the Vita more of a reason to be excited about it. That makes me very happy.
Yeah. I know that Christian is a huge fan of, I believe he's a huge fan of Hot Shots Golf, so he should be excited about that. Any other titles on here, Garnet, that you're excited about?
Everyone's golf is freaking fantastic. It's always been a great golf game, both for how well it replicates the actual game of golf, like ball physics and fun to play as far as the controls and playing a round of golf, but also for, you know, keeping golf, which oftentimes gets, you know, I think one of the things about golf games that can be off-putting is that if it's just a straight-up golf game with realistic players, it gets a little dry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like the fun of it, I mean, there's no denying that the fun of manipulating the controls and playing a game of golf in virtual world actually works really well and it's a lot of fun. But having a lighthearted approach, which everybody's golf does, I mean, that makes it fantastic. By the way, that's Hot Shots for Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's super great. I mean, I've had of the multitudinous Hot Shots that have come out, I've had like three or four different versions. I found the Vita version was like one of the most fun versions I played.
Totally agreed. Love that game.
What do you guys think of Resident Evil Revelations 2? Revelations 1 was a 3DS game at launch of the 3DS, if I'm not mistaken. But this one will not be, at least there's no mention of it being on 3DS. They're talking about it for PS4, Xbox One, 360, PS3, and PC. I'm not too particularly excited about it, but what do you guys think?
Have you played Revelations?
I did. Didn't love it. I didn't finish it or anything, but I played it at launch of the 3DS and was not terribly impressed. But did you like it more than that?
So my experience with Revelations is secondhand of watching people play it and talking to them about it. But the thing that has stood out about Revelations is that it has been the one Resident Evil over the past two or three games that was received by fans as being a Resident Evil game, you know, as recapturing some of that survival horror tension that had been exchanged for action games since 4. So to that extent, if Revelations 2, which is a true sequel, by the way, so it's not, I mean, this is not a reprise of anything else that was out there. It's going to be, you know, an entirely new game. There's going to be more information next week at TGS. It's going to be playable,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, they're going to have a demo, yeah.
At TGS. And you're back to zombies. So, you know, I feel like this is at least potentially the Biohazard game or the Resident Evil game that a lot of the fans will be, you know, hopeful and optimistic about. You know, clearly with the Silent Hill announcement, it's up against some challenging survival horror competition.
For sure, yeah. And it seems like Silent Hill is taking that next step into realizing what that franchise can be in a new generation rather than sort of just trying to create the same old experiences over and over. And I'm not entirely certain that Resident Evil has done that or will be doing that. Although there is this first trailer that was released of the Resident Evil 1 remake. So they're, you know, they're upping the graphics and actually completely remaking the game. This isn't just an up-res, but... they're being very careful, they say, to maintain the original feeling of the game and not change too much. But it is a full-on remake of Resident Evil 1. Now, Resident Evil 1 was not my favorite of the franchise. 2 was the one that got me into Resident Evil. Did you guys get a chance to see this trailer of the remake?
I have not watched the trailer.
Rich, nope, did you see? I have not seen it.
It looks real pretty, I got to say. It looks real pretty. So it's got that going for it. And, you know, I remember liking Resident Evil 1. If it's the same game over again, I don't know if it'll feel weird and a little anachronistic. But I think it's kind of rad that they're doing this. And I think we're going to see more and more of this as we progress in these old games that had gameplay styles that maybe are a little outdated.
So you didn't feel like that was one time back to the well too many, because that game has been redone how many times?
Yeah. No, I'm saying, it's, you know, Resident Evil 2 is the one that I want to play again and with better graphics, I guess.
And if they did it, would you want them to take the approach that they... So here's the thing. Here was the thing about Resident Evil Remake for GameCube was that it wasn't just that they went through and redid the visuals to it. It was that they changed the enemies. In particular, they made the Zombs way harder, faster, much more difficult, tense situations to deal with, especially in a lot of those places where you had those hallway run-bys. And so it made it a new experience of the same experience.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that you can do that again. I don't even sure that you want to do that. It's so weird. It's like, what do you do? Do you do that again? I don't know. I think that really this is just a move by Capcom to take content that they have that they know is really successful, that they know it's been a whole full generation of gamers who probably haven't ever seen it and probably don't have really great access to it, and put it back out again. And yeah, I wouldn't expect a lot more than that.
I consider myself to be right in that sweet spot there, because I mean, I played, like everybody in the world, I played Resident Evil 4, thoroughly enjoyed it. And like a lot of people in the world, played Resident Evil 5 and did not enjoy it. And then I have been off the Resident Evil train since then. So a new, you know, air quote, new Resident Evil that is based upon a particular version that people love that I haven't played before, that would get me more interested than, you know, just another Resident Evil, because the last new one that I played did not really do it for me.
Rich, if you've never played one, you should absolutely play one. I mean, on top of everything else, it's just gaming. It's part of gaming history.
Right. I just wrote that down.
Speaking of gaming history, well, let me tell you what my story of the week is before I get to some of these other stories. This one I think is really cool. It might not be the most important story that happened this week, but it might be my favorite. It was submitted by Raj Dute, who is a friend of the show. And it's this idea that Good Old Games, GOG, is moving into the movie rental business. And it's doing it in the same way that they've been doing older games, which is DRM-free. If you go to their website and check out the movies that they have for you to download, they are inexpensive. They're all about $6, $5.99. And they're all game-centric, gamer-centric ideas. There's, you know, you've got Indie Game the Movie. You've got Gamer Age. You've got Minecraft, the story. You've got The Art of Playing. You know, it's a bunch of these. Oh, the Dungeon Masters, which is the story of RPGs, I believe, tabletop RPGs. I love the fact, especially because we saw the demise of Xbox Studios and their initiative of kind of putting out content for gamers. I like that GOG is stepping up, doing it the right way, and creating a place that you can get these things inexpensively and see these projects that were made specifically for our sensibilities. And I'm applauding the way that they're doing it. The ones that they are doing it for, like their selection of titles is really strong. It looks really cool.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Is it something that if you subscribe, you know, you just pay like a regular subscription, you have access to all of them? Or is it you pay per?
I think it's only a la carte. It's only a la carte. Okay. And in the same way that GOG games are a la carte, and right. you download, you know, whatever that old game is for however much it's selling for right now. But they're, you know, the fact that they're bringing movies and they're doing it DRM free the same way they're doing games, I think that's, they're making it no hassle. They're highlighting a bunch of film projects that are for us and are interesting and probably would get buried on larger services like Netflix. So, I think this is cool, and I hope people check it out. I think if you go to gog.com/movies, you can see their initial. There's only 21 movies right now, so it's a very small number, but they're all like handpicked gamer movies. You know, it's kind of
like Bronies, the extremely unexpected adult fans of My Little Pony.
Right, it's right targeted to our sensibilities, just like I said. Cronies.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've found recently, especially in the last couple of years, right, as there's so many ways to consume media and games and music, when somebody does a great job for a niche that you really like of curating things in one spot, it's so much easier to discover than trying to sift through the morass that is all these other distribution services. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Well, speaking of strangely anthropomorphized animals, what do you guys make of this Pokken tournament announcement? We saw a mashup between Pokemon and Tekken announced this week. This was submitted by @acornejo on Twitter. And it's coming from Bandai Namco. And it supposedly is a mashup of Tekken and Pokemon, but it's really just a Pokemon fighting game. There aren't going to be any Tekken characters in it. Interesting. I don't know. I mean, if we needed any more example of how fighting games are back, it's the fighting gamification of a franchise that was previously not a fighting game. So maybe there's that going for the fighting game genre. Rich, are you going to be playing Pokken Tournament?
I am very close to becoming thrown into that world, I believe, just because, you know, as my son discovers things, that kind of brings a lot of stuff to the fore for me. So I'm not there yet, but I have a feeling it won't be that long before all of this stuff is, you know, is a household name and a household brand to me.
Yeah.
Well, so the question there, though, is how well does the Pokemon's – does the Pokemon appeal to the – kid gamer world apply to a Tekken style fighting game? And by the way, it's being unveiled for arcades, so, you know, I mean,
yeah, that's crazy too.
Likely that it will ultimately come to some sort of, you know, home console system. I think that the secret sauce here is that, number one, in arcades you're constantly looking, I mean, you look at the way series are tweaked and upgraded to continuously give a new experience in the arcade. It's very important, you know, as we're, you know, in Tokyo, we have like a real Japan, we have a real arcade culture, to have those new experiences for players to come in and keep playing and get interested. I mean, there's one thing about, you know, mastering a game and being expert at it. And there's another of when, you know, going to the arcade is part of your entertainment, you want to have new experiences. Like, you want to go there and see new machines and have new games to play. Pokemon, because of the background of the SIS series, I mean, this gives a lot of interesting room for the fighting game designers to play around with moves, right? Because you're going to bring in all of that elemental aspect. That's a big part of Pokemon battling when you are playing Pokemon games. But how do you do that in a fighting game? Well, you know, clearly you're not going to stop and have them launch a spell attack, but each of the different Pokemon will have their elemental affinities and probably have really cool elemental affinity-based specials. So it creates some very interesting layers to the way the competitive matchup could go inside a fighting game. So actually, while at first you sort of say, oh, what's a little silly, you know, you sort of peel back the idea a little bit and say, wow, actually, there's a lot of room that this opens up to have fun with.
Yeah. And the video looked kind of interesting. And they're saying it's not going to just be the, you know, final evolution of the Pokemon in as their incarnation in the game. There's going to be multiple different ways of using the Pokemon, so they don't necessarily have to have arms and legs in order to attack. And they're, you know, the designer is claiming that they're going to have a kind of unique, different system, a new, different mechanic for attacks. It's not just going to be a high, mid, low guards. Interesting. Interesting. I don't know.
Definitely.
Some.
You still have not revealed yours, though.
No, I did. Mine was the GOG thing.
Oh, yours was the GOG. Yeah, it was the movies. That's right. I was a little taken aback by that. I sort of.
I just think it's a cool idea. I dig it. But there was a lot of PAX news as well, including the announcement of a standalone Saints Row expansion called Saints Row Gat Out of Hell.
Of course.
Which is bringing your character from Saints Row literally down to hell. Mm. And the cool thing about this, I think, is how Volition continues to support this title. You know, they're bringing Saints Row 4, a new version of Saints Row 4, to next-gen consoles with all the DLC included. And they just released the software development kit for end users on PC so people can create their own levels and stuff. I dig a company. It seems rarer and rarer now that these companies continue to support games long into their life cycle. And I think this is cool. It sounds like it's going to be typically wacky and zany. They said there's going to be a musical number. So, you know, what do you guys think? You ready to dive back into Saints Row, Rich?
In the last couple, two or three years, especially as my son has started to share gaming experiences with me and we play a lot more games together, I have not played really Saints Row for in that time. So this, again, is perfect for me, right? There's no Saints Row on in the next-gen consoles. You know, it's a great time for me to jump back in. I have a lot of friends who play the franchise and love it. So this is, again, it's kind of like I'm talking about before, a really good opportunity on the platform that hasn't been for me to dive in and get an experience I haven't had for a while. I have played many Saints Rows in the past, and they are certainly unique, and I'm interested to see what this one's like.
Yeah, I think the interesting also is this trend that seems to be happening where we're getting these standalone DLC packs where you're getting a smaller priced extra gaming area or level or storyline. I guess GTA was the first to sort of do that, but I think the original game was still required in order to play those, like Lost in the Damned and stuff, right? Or were those completely standalone? Yeah,
it was initially.
But you know, Far Cry 3's, you know, Blood Dragon thing, and, mm-hmm. and I feel like this is happening more and more now, where they're using the engine, they're using all the investment that they've made into the game to create a new standalone product that's budget priced, that gets people continuing to enjoy the IP in new and different ways, but you don't actually have to have owned the original title. I think that's cool.
I love that. In particular, on this past weekend show, I do a show with Pete Dodd called The Doddcast, and somebody specifically asked, you know, is this sort of a wave of the future? And I would love more of these kinds of games that do not demand 20, 30, 40, 50 more hours, where you can get a AAA-like experience but have it in a 4 to 8 hour period. I mean, we're mm-hmm. we all have jobs, we all have families, we all have careers, we've all got things that we want to do. And for a lot of us, you know, like Infamous is a great example, right? Infamous Second Son came out. I played a whole bunch of it. I got 40 or 50% of the way through, and then I just haven't picked it back up because it just seems like so much more to do, and I want to experience and play other games. So like with the new Infamous DLC that just came out, I look at that, I'm like, I'm actually probably more interested in playing that because there's a light at the end of the tunnel that you don't have with some of these other games. So I love it, and I hope this becomes even more common.
Well, it seems like you have to have the original game and its giant budget and its giant price tag and its, you know, huge marketing push and all that stuff in order to allow these supplementary versions to come out, these smaller versions to exist.
Well, of course, so, I mean, like the sort of part and parcel of what they exist as, right? I mean, otherwise, you wouldn't take them. I mean, a mid-tier game wouldn't have the engine and right. world base to build off of. I mean, that is what this yeah. is all about. You know, you touched on Blood Dragon. I mean, the thing about Blood Dragon was that it took all of those systems and then repurposed them in a completely new twist and direction, which it sounds mm-hmm. a lot like what Gat Out of Hell is going to do as well.
Right.
I'm sorry. Well, the other thing for me about Saints Row is that I've tried Saints Row a couple of times and it just never has connected with me. I tried the third. I have not played four, but I tried the third and I actually tried to stick with the third two or three times and it just didn't work for me.
Hmm. I think what also, if you look at it from the development standpoint, right, like building new AAA games for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and PC, there's so much more that goes into it now than there was in the PS3, 360, and then obviously looking back, you know, PS2. There's so much more that needs to get created from an art and from an intelligence standpoint. So I know some people like to complain about, you know, remasterings and up-reses or, you know, these smaller, shorter, new experiences. But on the other hand, it really, being able to leverage what you've done, I would love it. I mean, it's the old thing that you guys have talked about for years, you know, episodic content. If being able to leverage what you've done before and create newer bite-sized chunks, I think, is something that I hope and I believe we're going to see again, just because the amount of effort to create a completely new AAA franchise is so significant on these new consoles.
All right. Well, I think that's going to probably do it for Story of the Week. And that, of course, brings us to the playlist. Ooh, what you doing to play the fancy? I'm not good at singing that one. Hopefully we'll get a drop in post.
That
guys.
Was the most sad dropout sort of.
Ooh,
like,
what you playing
I'm
this
sing
week?
The,
tell us.
Punch
Ooh,
out.
What you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist. Right?
That was good. There was some spirit
there.
There
you go. Oh, yeah, appearing next season on Nashville.
The playlist is the part of the show where we like to hear from you, the listeners. If you're listening live right now, you can call in and let us know what you've been playing, what you're enjoying by calling 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. I've been wanting to have Rich on the show for a while now, but I figured the perfect time would be right after Madden 15 was released. Your show is all about sports games. And I know, Garnet, you've been playing Madden as well. So let's talk a little bit about that new Madden.
Bum, Rich, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, I'm ready for some football discussion.
Yeah. Well, the next gen, in my opinion, has been very kind to Madden. The Madden franchise really struggled as the PS3 360 generation went on. They introduced some new things like better physics and such, but the PS4, the Xbox One platforms have breathed some new life into it. Last year's debut did not look much better. The visuals are virtually the same, but on the field, I feel, and I think Garnet disagrees with me, but I feel on the field, the game itself was much stronger. You know, blocking was better. A lot of challenges still. And so they built upon that this year. What they've really done is the visuals have now been, I believe, significantly improved. There's more of a really crisp television style graphics. The scores, you know, if you're playing in a connected franchise, you get an idea what's going on in your league, the kind of things that we've never seen before. On the field, again, in a lot of ways is stronger. There have been some things that they've done with outside running. They've kind of nerfed it by dumbing down the offensive line a little bit there. But for the most part, I think on the field feels stronger. And so, I mean,
because what we needed was linemen who blocked worse.
Yeah, we can get into that a little bit. But the other thing that
it's an offensive league, Garnet. It's an offensive league.
But the other thing that I found very interesting is they're really pushing analytics now. And it wasn't something they brought up on the back of the box. But when you start playing it, you realize just how much they are putting information in front of you. As you're walking to the huddle, you can see what play the defense called the play before. You can see what play you called. You can see how many yards you gained, what the average yards of the community is. You can do a lot more analysis of matchups at the line of scrimmage. You can look at where you have mismatches in one way or the other. You can see how your line is blocking and how that changes over the game.
Delay of game, Richem.
Yeah,
5-yard penalty, repeat first down.
There's a lot to process. And for people who've been playing Madden for a long time, it's pretty disorienting because the user interface is completely different. The way that you do things like call plays, which you kind of have to do regularly in Madden, is wildly different. Not just the how it looks, but also how you navigate it. And they're really, it feels to me like the Madden development team is really pushing this idea that you are the head coach. And a head coach in the NFL gets plays called in, most of them, from their offensive and defensive coordinators. They're really pushing you to basically sign off on the play that they're recommending. And they're then telling you why. Like, well, you want to call this play because it gains this amount of yards against this kind of defense. And really, it feels to me they're really pushing it that way. And to get out of that and to go back to the way that a lot of people play, which is I want to pick my formation or I want to pick my, you know, the type of play I want to call and then go and find it. It's really disconcerting. So, there's a whole lot new going on in Madden this year, and it's causing some problems for some longtime players. But all told, I'm personally enjoying it quite a bit.
So you bring up a whole mix in philosophy there of what it's like when you bring your team up to the line. And you're right. They are asking you to be the coach by providing you all of those things. Like, here are the community's most successful plays on this down and yardage situation in this position. And that's great. And I get what you're saying. I feel like most of us, or many of us who play football, Madden, used to be ESPN, like, a big part of the thrill is choosing the play. Like, is we actually want to be the coordinator, not so much the coach, because we want to feel like, hey, I know this down and distance situation, and I want to try a gamble. I mean, I want to try and catch them off guard and go play action here, although play action isn't necessarily what they would expect. Or I want to try and go, you know, mid-pass because they should be looking for run. Or I want to just, like, run it up the gut because I think I'll catch them sitting back in a nickel or something. And how much of the AI and even the community dumped in data is going to give you that? Conversely, what they're asking you to do is sort of switch minds and be in a quarterback and head coach sort of place of, right, you know, here comes the, don't waste your time. You've got 25 seconds. Don't waste your time electing what play to run. We're going to give you a play that matches down in distance. But what you do need to do is, when you break huddle, use that coach mode by, you know, banging down the right stick and then looking around. So you can look at, Jeff, you can use the right stick to look at any of your players as you come up to the line, and it gives you in detail their strengths and weaknesses against the defender that's been matched up against them. So particularly in passing plays, this is huge. You're going to get a speed comparison. You're going to get a route running comparison. You're going to get a height comparison. So you can really get a feel for, okay, you know, where, what, which of my routes out here is going to be open and wide? Like, if I have a guy on a streak, but he's a minus five on speed, well, clearly I've got a problem there. But if I've got a guy, you know, running, you know, a sharp in, and he's got a good significant plus on route running, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm probably set up. I can probably at least count on this as my secondary. It does help a lot, because you're able to then come up to the line and do like a quarterback would, of assessing those matchups and determining your progressions. But there's no way you're going to be able to do all that. There's no way you're going to be able to choose your formation and play and do the pre-line reads and be able to look at all your matchups and get all that done and snap the ball before you run out of time.
Yeah.
And then once you do snap the ball, Madden is kind of punishing. Like, you will pay for mistakes, right? If you do what I do a lot, which is, all right, I want to lock in on this tight end because I think he's going to be open. And you throw it to him, and if he isn't open, you are not going to complete it, and you are going to throw an interception. Or if you're trying to force things into double coverage and sometimes even single coverage, like, you will pay for your mistakes, particularly if you're playing on All Pro, which is sort of the default mode for, or the default difficulty for online. It does not give you a break. And that's a good thing in that it forces you to make your reads and understand what's going on. But boy, it can be difficult for players to have success, just because it does really make you work to complete your passes.
Yeah, I mean, my advice to players who look at the especially running, running plays different than passing plays. But if you're looking at a passing play, you're always going to have that, you know, designated primary receiver. I would take that as a suggestion at best. Yes, that is what the play ostensibly has been designed around. However, you have to be able to, once you go up to the line, know all the receivers' routes that you have, how they match up against what sort of defense it appears that you're facing, and what the matchups are. Because if you're like, it's funny you say you lock in. I almost never break huddle thinking that I have any idea of who I'm actually going to be targeting in my progression 1-2-3. I have an idea of, like, oh, I like, you know, for this situation, you know, I like Dez on that, you know, back shoulder fade, but maybe it's going to be a horrible situation for that. I mean, maybe they're sitting there in cover two and I'm like, you know what, no, I'm not, that's not even going to happen. So now I got to come back down and look at, you know, it looks like I've got Witten on a quick slant or on a, you know, post, and that's going to go right into an open spot. So you just have to be really ready to be flexible like that and not hung up about the red line, because the red line primary, yeah, that was what the play was designed to get open. But just because it was designed to get that open doesn't mean that against the matchup you have, it's going to be open.
Well, I mean, that's how real football is as well. So that's a good thing.
That is how football is.
But I always have a hard time in a video game version of football reading down through a progression, because I feel like the information that they're giving me on screen is hard to jump between as far as knowing when a guy is open and not open. And also I have to worry about moving my guy around in the pocket potentially to avoid a sack. And yes,
real world, bro.
What's that?
Real world, bro.
Yeah, I know. But in real world, you have so many other senses helping you out. It's not just darting your eyes around. And I feel like the game itself could give you a better sense of danger. I mean, why don't they work in some sort of...
What's the first thing you watch when... So obviously, most of this, we're talking about passing plays, right?
Right.
So what's the first thing you look at snap on a passing play?
After you snap the ball?
You hit X, what's the first thing your eyes are looking at?
The line coming at me. Okay. And then a couple of seconds in, after my receivers have sort of made their first cut or whatever they're going to do, then I'm looking at where the receivers are going and how, you know, who's on each of them. And usually I only have time to look at the primary guy and maybe one other dude, and I'm pushing a button.
That's about right. I think that's pretty realistic. But here's one thing I can help you with. I can guarantee, other than a few exotic, disguised zones, the line is coming at you. If it's three or four down linemen, they're all coming at you. You don't need to worry about whether or not they're coming at you, but what you do need to read is how much extra pressure is coming. So Right. Don't focus on the line. Focus on that linebackers. Mid-tier. Linebackers, or are they bringing a safety, or worse, the really one that can, you know, burn you if you're sitting there for a minute. Are they in a nickel, and are they bringing like that slot corner on a hot rush?
Right.
Because that could, like, usually that's really hard to get someone out to pick up. And if you see that and you think it's a worry, that's where you want to maybe reassign your running back to stay in the pocket and, you know, give you extra support. So don't worry about the line. They're coming, right?
Right.
Make sure that you read what's happening with the defense. Because the second part of that is now you're already looking into the secondary, and you should know based off of what routes you had in the play that you chose, at least right off the bat, what sort of stuff ought to be open for you. Like, were those guys uptight because they're in man, or are they just playing like a press zone? Did your wide receiver one, who you're trying to get to, did he get stumbled on that press, or did he get off fast, and is he open on a quick break?
And
then the next Then the next thing is, keep in mind to go back and forth, right? So watch for blitz and pressure. Look for your first guy. Look back into the pocket to see what you, because every quarterback has some mobility. Like, right. did your line give you a pocket? Can you step up into the pocket? Or
right.
do you need to roll out? Because oftentimes, you know, a lot of people, they'll see people playing Madden and they'll be like, oh, I want to get my guy outside. Well, if you don't have a running quarterback, breaking the tackle box is probably a bad idea because your guy doesn't have the footwork and the speed to be successful at that. Now you're outside of the way the blocking scheme has been set up. And so suddenly your blockers are not positioned for leverage, and those guys that they were engaged with disengage and they come and run you down very fast.
Right.
Now, obviously, if you're playing a running quarterback, that's a little different situation. Well, you might be better served, like as they say in the NFL, just stepping up into that pocket and then looking downfield again. Like, you already read your first read. You know that wasn't there. So just take, you know, look down. Am I safe? Good. Step up.
I just feel like there could be a better way. There could be a better way for the game to give me feedback that I'm feeling pressure. You know what I mean? Like, I could still have my eyes downfield and the game could rumble or maybe indicate on the edges of the screen some kind of feeling that pressure coming on my backside or whatever. And so I can move up without having to take my eyes off of the receivers downfield. Because I feel like that's the biggest challenge that I have is like darting my eyes around and then tick, 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 tick. Oh, I hit it, got a sack. Or, oh, I just pushed a button just to get rid of the ball. And I wasn't really throwing it to the guy who was best to be throwing it to in this particular case.
Don't be hesitant to use click the right stick. Click the right stick to throw the damn ball away. And if you do get to trouble, then get outside the tackle box. But know that once you get outside the tackle box, if you're not like a evader, just get outside the tackle box and flick the ball away. It's not grounding. Boom, you move on to fight again.
One of the things that they have done really well this year, and for the first time, is they teach you how to play the game. There is a significantly expanded skills trainer that not only, it's not about teaching you, you know, how to throw a pass or how to run the ball, but it teaches you how to recognize a defense. Is it man? Is it zone? These are the things to look for. And then it teaches you these are the best types of plays to combat these types of situations. So if you get to the line and you recognize that it is a particular type of defense, you can easily hot route. And then instead of worrying so much about the pressure, you know that you can get it away shortly. Or if you can see that you got a matchup that's good against a cover two, you don't have to worry so much about that. It's really interesting how they have decided to teach people how to play the game, because most sports games, particularly most sports sim games, assume that you know a lot. And
right. Yep.
For the first time, and it's not just a 5-minute thing. Like, it's a really significant deep skills trainer that not only helps newcomers, but it's helping me, because I've been playing Madden for a long time, but I'm not one of these professional Madden players. Like, I mean, I'm decent, but I play for fun, right? And the skill trainer really is doing a good job helping me recognize just key things that will prevent you from making terrible plays. And that's a good starting point that they have now that they haven't had in the past.
That's awesome.
So my only complaint with that thing is that it goes from 0 to 100. And there's no real ramp in on it, right? So the part that he's talking about, the teaching fundamentals of the game, immediately starts with how to beat defense X. And instead of explaining, you know, going back a step and saying like, okay, like if you're facing a man-to-man coverage, you want to do this. If you're facing a zone coverage, you want to do this. It just immediately starts jumping into specific examples of those. And rattling off all these different principles that I think could be overwhelming. Now, it does lead ultimately to this thing you can go back to many, many times called the gauntlet and keep, you know, refining your ability to understand how to beat those different situations, which is a really good, really, really good idea. They took a great step. And I love that the progression of the game, when you fire up Madden, drops you right into learning the game. It drops you. It doesn't take you to a menu screen. It actually, they have it like a hardwired, bring you into the game sort of system of taking you into this skills trainer. It's too long because there's no way. I bet there is nobody who turned on Madden and played through the entire skills trainer before going to the main menu.
Well, is it meant to be something you dip back into from time
yes.
to time?
Oh, you can definitely go back to it. And then there's the gauntlet, so you can keep going back to it to keep getting better at it.
Yeah. So both of you guys would say this is a recommend for this year's Madden?
I do. I mean, I'm really excited. We have an online league of which Garnett is a member, and I can't wait to crank it up. We played for 5 seasons last year. In fact, we wrapped up our 5th season about a week or so before Madden 15 came out. So I played last year's from November till a month ago, and I'm definitely definitely recommending it, and I know that I will be playing. It's not perfect, right? There's all sorts of little things that you'll see and experience that you'll dislike. And I know, Jeff, you're a huge fan of Phil Sims, all right? So
yeah, I will play.
I think I'm actually a lower fan than even that guy. That guy in that commentary just drives me mad.
Gideon! Sackleem! Oh, you got a Sackleem?
The commentary is not good at all, but that's when I just start listening to podcasts anyway. But I mean, overall, it's good, and I'm going to be playing it for a long time. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's a shame that it's our only choice, right? I mean, the big, you know, Madden generates a lot of passionate responses in the community. A lot of people dislike it just because of the exclusivity deal that EA has. It is the only choice for NFL football. And they've made some design decisions over the past 5 to 7 years, some seasons that have not worked out well. But it sure feels to me like the team that's making Madden is going in a positive direction. And I'm very happy with where they are this year. Lots of places to improve, but overall, a strong game.
Okay. I won't endorse it quite so strongly because it is yet another of their, hey, here's our yearly iteration on the design, and there's still problems, and there's a few things we fixed, but we fixed them from time before last because we're actually rolling our teams in, rolling our one team in this sort of weird overlapped method. Mm-hmm. That having been said, I feel like this version so far from what I've played has more next-gen feel to it than their first stab at it on next-gen. Mm-hmm. In other words, I look at this game, you can definitely see the visual improvement. Now, the visual improvement, especially in player models, does sort of draw how much room they have to improve on the animation systems. Because they, you know, they always say they've added a lot of animations, but you're going to see a lot of the animations that you've seen in prior Maddens. But now the player models look really significantly better, although they're a little odd because I feel like somehow in the upgrade that they've done to the player models that they sort of have whiffed a little bit on proportion. Sometimes their legs and the whole like body proportions just don't feel quite right for whatever reason it might be. They've added a lot of camera options. And I think that's one thing you would find is really cool, Jeff, is though, for instance, on defense, you can now lock on a player and play from their point of view. So if you want to play, you know, a lot of people have hesitated to play back in the defensive backfield. Well, now it's really quite cool. You can hop back there to a safety or a corner and not only lock on to the player so the camera follows them, you can even flip it around so you're playing from the defensive player's perspective.
Hmm.
You can move the camera up and down through a number of different zoom heights. So depending on what sort of play you're trying to run, if you want, you know, if you've always wanted, wow, I would wish I had a little more wide field vision, no problem. Mm-hmm. Bump down on the D-pad a couple times, and now you have really great wide field vision.
It's interesting.
So yeah, there's Madden, a lot of touches like that.
It's a huge game. Like, there are deep modes. If you are a purely offline guy and you just want to play on your own in a universe, there's a ton there. If you're an ultimate team guy, like some people are purely ultimate team, there's this huge new ultimate team mode. There's online leagues. It's a very big game, and a lot of different type of people can get different experiences out of it and enjoy it. But it, you know, it's definitely you need to go in with your eyes wide open. Right? There's a lot going on, and it can be a lot of different experiences to different people.
Well, let's find out what some other people are playing. We got some folks on the line now. I have somebody from the 251 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hello, my name is Carson Clark. I'm here from Alabama. Down south, they're winning for some football. Roll Tide.
Awesome.
And also, on my playlist, I'm like a week ago, they had the new Humble Jumbo Bundle with a bunch of games. I already had this, but I shared it with some people, and so I've been playing King of Fighters 13. It's been one of my favorite fighting games this season, and I've been playing it on Steam, and since that bundle came out, been seeing a lot of people coming into it, new blood and old blood.
Very cool, man. King of Fighters still going strong. Who knew? I certainly AOF. Didn't, but that's awesome. Were you a King of Fighters fan, Garnet, back in the day?
I am a 3D fighting fan, and
yeah,
primarily that's always been where my strengths have been, and I have had my thumbs cleaned several times on King of Fighters. Especially it's a fairly technical one, and folks who are good at King of Fighters are good. King of Fighters is definitely a game that separates those who are practiced and understand the system and know how to play it from those who don't.
I feel like back in, you know, when I was a kid, and it was either, you know, you picked your Capcom fighters or your Neo Geo fighters, and that, and you know, never the twain shall meet. There were some people that played both, but you specialized, and I was always a Street Fighter guy, and never really got into the Neo Geo fighters so much. But King of Fighters always had a healthy respect for it, that's for sure.
You know, I have no horse in the race, but I feel like you guys all hopping all over that Roll Tide. I need to represent for the rest of that community. War Eagle.
Oh man.
War Eagle, Rich. War Eagle.
Oh, killing me.
All right, I got somebody else on the line from 818. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And, well, I think I know where you're calling from. My backyard, if it's 818. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, Jeff. This is Aldrin calling from Burbank. And I've been playing Azure Striker Gunbolt on 3DS.
Tell me about it.
It's pretty rad. If you're a fan of like any Mega Man game, Mega Man X, things like that, it plays a lot like that with a couple twists here and there. It's pretty neat.
That is one I have not played at all. You guys, either of you guys, have any experience with that game?
No, I don't.
Jeff, is it on a handheld? You know me; I keep my handhelds around mostly to use as paperweights. Apparently,
yeah. I mean, similarly to King of Fighters, I feel like there's a whole group of people that love the Mega Man franchise, love Mega Man derivatives, love that style. I used to have a roommate that was like obsessed with Mega Man and would play them over and over and over again and be able to play them blindfolded practically. I was never that guy either. And, as much as people are excited about what's that Kickstartered Mega Man game?
Mighty Number 9?
Yeah, people are excited about that. I'm excited about it from afar. I just don't have – it's just not part of my DNA in the way it's –
By the way, backers get their beta first level
today.
Next week. Today.
Wow. I thought it was today. You know, these are good times for people who like those games. Like I've been playing Shovel Knight, and there's clearly some similarities there as well. Some really good stuff going on with those kind of games. That a little tough for me. I'm fighting through it, struggling through it, trying my best. But there's some really interesting games in that type of genre happening right now.
See if we can squeeze in a couple more calls. We got somebody from 612. Where are you calling from? What's on your playlist?
Hey guys, Derek. It's called from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I've been playing a few things lately. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy 14, a lot of Dota 2, and because I'm living in Minnesota, Minneapolis specifically, right down the street from Fantasy Flight Games HQ, so I'm playing a lot of board games as well.
What board games are you playing?
Recently, played a lot of Eldritch Horror.
Nice. There's
one called Nothing Personal. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a a mob game, kind of like a social it's like a freeform social game.
It's all about insulting your friends and double crossing them. It's a fantastic game. It was designed by one of the guests we had on the show several weeks ago, Tom Vassell and his partner on that. And it's a really high quality components, really cool game, but it's one of those friend enders, they call them, you know, like Diplomacy or The Resistance, where it's all about staring your good friend directly in their face and lying to them. So there's some people that like those kinds of games and there's other people that don't. But Nothing Personal is a fantastic one.
And there's some people who, despite the name, can't take it that way.
You can't play Take Nothing Personal. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's called that. And Dota 2, man. My mission lately is to get Garnet to play Heroes of the Storm with me because I'm so hooked on that game. It's not even funny. I know you want me to try League. I tried League this week. I booted it up just because Heroes of the Storm was having maintenance for like more than a day, and so
really?
I was like,
that was what it got. Oh, that's so under maintenance. I'm gonna go try League.
That's what it took, man. When I logged on and they're like, we're gonna be down until noon tomorrow, I was like, noon tomorrow? Well, I guess I'll click this League of Legends icon that's been sitting on my desktop this whole time.
Nice.
It just you know I understand the draw. I understand why people dig it. To me, it feels just because I'm digging on Heroes so much, it feels sluggish. It feels the animations are simplistic. Heroes is just so polished, even as an alpha, quote unquote alpha. I understand.
Wait, so you're repping the polish of Heroes over League, which has been out for 5 years?
Yeah, man. kind of.
Balance in League is night and day over
no
where
doubt.
Heroes is.
Well, I don't know if it's night and day, dude. I remember when you were talking about Heroes back in the day and I hadn't played it yet and I had no idea. I think you were on this show talking about it actually. And I would take issue with what you were saying, that when there's a big discrepancy in the team leveling, that there is, that it's hard to make up that difference. I don't think that's the case. I really don't. Because they do a lot of things to make your kills worth more when you're really far behind. And yeah, there should be, if you're getting your butt kicked, you should be able to get your butt kicked. It shouldn't be completely balanced.
But you know, it really changes the whole world so intently, because look, the whole idea of, and the first thing, a complaint that a lot of folks have about MOBAs and their complexity is last hitting. And last hitting is the system inside a MOBA whereby you gain experience for your character.
And gold. Yeah.
Nope. Just experience. Because you're always getting gold also, but you're not getting as much.
I thought in Dota you only get gold.
I'm sorry, it's gold. I did it backwards.
Yeah.
if you're in range, you get experience, but you're always trying to get gold into your key players because it builds in the item system. And so that's why it's so important, is because when you go into the early part of the game, it's really important, especially if you're sharing a lane. So usually you'll have, you know, like two people in one lane, two people in one lane, and one in another one in the solo. It's really important for the two people to understand which one of the two players should be getting the last hits and gathering the gold, because they're trying to build up their item progression while both of them are supporting each other and building experience in their lane, because now it starts to break out into, you know, separate channel. Like each of the lanes becomes its own tactical battle.
Right.
Whereas if everybody's leveling together and your whole team is all at level 14, like that's a big thing to take out of the game.
But the way that they... what they replace it with are these map specific mechanics. So you are given more freedom in a sense, but you also have to play as a team in a more, in a different way, not in more or less way, but in a different way. Like I have to play as a team in those other games because I have to maintain my lane. I have to know what works in top as opposed to working in mid or bot. And I have to play those lanes correctly. With Heroes, yes, there's a little more free form. It's not as important who, what character you select, can go top, can go mid, can go bot, whatever. But when those game mechanics come up, you need to know how to handle them, where to go, how to work as a team, how to split your team up to do multiple objectives at once or not. And there's
Way to handle them. As soon as those map things happen, you better get on it, because if you lose them, you're in trouble.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's one particular map, the doubloons, or no, the map with the mines in it, where you go into the mines and you're on a completely different map underneath the original map. There are legit strategies I've seen people win with it, where nobody goes down into the mines and you literally just, while the other team is down trying to get the golem to maximum strength down in the mines, you stay up and you just push hard to their base and you try to rush them before they can, you know, do the thing down in the bottom part of the map. So there's different strategies.
Man, I would take that golem every time, because that golem, once he's, especially if he's really swung to your side, the counter rush when he comes up is going to be ridiculous.
Yes, but there's a legit strategy to go the other way. And that's all I'm saying, is that it's not just removing complexity. It's subbing in different kinds of complexity. And it's complexity that I happen to really enjoy, because I feel like I'm a vital part of my team, whereas if I was playing League or Dota, I'd probably be on the bottom of the leveling list, you know? But I'm getting better. I'm learning how to play this game because I feel like I'm integrated into my team. Yes, we get our butt kicked sometimes, but also I've been on the other end. I've kicked a lot of butt. So there's a lot of butt in this game.
There's a lot of butt in there.
A lot of butt. Yeah, that was a little bit of a side tangent, but I do want to talk about a game I have played this week, because while everybody was at PAX or Dragon Con, I was at home and I went to a local convention here in Los Angeles at a hotel ballroom called Strategicon. And Strategicon is really fun. I've been to it several years and it is much smaller scale than those others, but a lot of fun board games and tabletop stuff and some video game stuff too. But one thing in particular that I got to play was this game called Artemis. Have you guys heard of this?
Nope.
I have not.
It's an available game that you can buy. It's $40. You can download it and play on your own system. But I played it at a convention environment, which is far superior than, unless you really invest in this, the convention environment is the way to play this game. Basically, Artemis is... it's not licensed, but it is basically trying to create the Star Trek bridge experience. So the way this worked at the convention was there was a giant projector screen in this room, and they were
projecting. Oh, this has been around for a while. I remember that. I remember watching Roger Chang play this once.
Yeah, I think it's been iterated on. It's one guy made it. One dude is making it. But it's really cool. So there's one big projection screen that shows your view in space, right? Just like you would see on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. And then in a semicircle, there are six stations, and each of those stations has their own touchscreen monitor on it. And each of the stations is different: comms, weapons, engineering, helm, captain, I can't remember the last one. It's all the stuff that you would find in Star Trek. And each of those has their own unique interface that's a completely unique game unto themselves. And the captain sits in the center and asks people for various bits of information. He's got his own screen telling him certain things. And we're trying to go out into the galaxy, dock with stations, bring them goods, fight bad guys in the same way that you would in Star Trek. But the real win with all of this is that you are limited in knowing what's going on between what's on your screen and what's on the main screen. And everybody has a different piece of that puzzle. So in order to accomplish anything, everybody has to communicate. And it becomes this wild, rambunctious, crazy, chaotic thing of like stuff. I was playing comms in our particular session, which lasts about an hour. And I have messages coming in from the humans that we're allied with, messages coming in from the enemies taunting us, telling us that they're going to kill us. I'm threatening them. I'm sending messages back to our space stations to tell them to prepare certain weapons so that we can go pick them up and you know, put them on our ship to use later. And I'm trying to relay all that information to the captain so he can make decisions like, okay, captain, this space station is you know, has got nukes for us to pick up. And he's like, okay, you know, Helms, let's plot a course for that. So Helms has got to plot that course. And it just becomes this – when the S hits the F and you're in a big battle, everybody's yelling out information and the captain has to figure out how to handle it. It was just such chaotic fun. I would highly recommend anybody that's even has a passing interest in Star Trek. And even if you don't really, it's not about living that dream. It's about working as a team and being – having this manic insanity happen all around you. We actually had – there were a bunch of little kids that were just watching in the room, and then they started swarming around us, and so it got even more chaotic and crazy. We didn't know any of them. They just all started helping us out because it was like, oh, the adults are getting their butts kicked by the Romulans or faux Romulans. But you can actually download this. They have a iPad app version so that you can use the touchscreen. I just don't know how good it would work unless you really committed to setting it up the right way, you know, in a big room, because it's really all about the talking that is above and beyond anything that happens in the game. It's about communicating to one another. So it was a blast.
One of the things that I look forward to, my son is 7 years old, so we're obviously playing a lot of games together. And in fact, just today, he loves maps, so I went out and bought the board game Risk, so that he and I can start playing that. I think that'll be a great way to introduce him to board games above and beyond what, you know, he sort of has, which are really little kid games. But one of the things that I look forward to over the next few years, you know, I will have almost between my son and his friends all of a sudden have this built-in group of people to play some of these kinds of games with that I have not had in the past. So I'm really excited about that because, you know, I listen to the show and I hear all of these different games that you talk about, Jeff, these board games. And I'm just like, man, I really, it sounds great, but you need a group of people and you need the place and the time. And some people, obviously a lot of people can make that happen and it's awesome. But being able to share it with your kids and then like his friends, it sounds to me like that's going to be, I'm really looking forward to that, because clearly board games have had a real renaissance in the last few years. Or maybe they haven't. I've just heard about them a lot because I listen to you. But regardless, there's a lot of great games out there. And now I'm going to be able to play them with you know, in a setting that's, you know, that's fun. And sharing that kind of experience with your kids is going to be, I think, really, really a whole lot of fun.
Well, I can't think of any better transition into tabletop time.
Right now.
Tabletop time. I can't do that. I definitely can't do that.
Tabletop time?
Right about now. So let's talk about a little bit about that. I think it's cool that you bought Risk. Which version of Risk did you buy?
It is the, I believe, just the classic version, right? It just says Risk on it, and it says that it's got basically three different ways. There's a way to play for beginners. There's the, you know, just one versus one way, and then sort of the traditional way. So it certainly looks on the box like the Risk, the version of Risk that I played when I was playing this when I was a kid.
Well, I don't know if you heard last week's episode when I was talking about Risk Legacy, but if you if you manage to get your son hooked on Risk, Risk Legacy is the next step. Even if you haven't played Risk before, I would say Risk Legacy is your destination, because that is amazing. It's an amazing experience. And yeah, if you can get like a group of people to be consistent about it, talk about talk about a rewarding, ongoing experience. I highly recommend that. But another game that I played at this convention at Strategicon here in Los Angeles is a game I think I've talked about before, but if not, I'm remiss because it is it's a no-brainer. I entered in, my friends and I entered into a King of Tokyo tournament at this convention. Mm. And if you haven't played King of Tokyo, man, this, your seven-year-old, this is perfect. Perfect. Although there is, the only caveat being that there is just announced at Gen Con an update called King of New York, which adds some interesting mechanics and people seem to think is a plus one to this game. So you might want to wait for King of New York to be widely available. But King of Tokyo is great. It's basically Yahtzee style mechanics. So you're rolling dice and then you can keep however many of those roll dice the way they are that you like and roll re-roll as many as you like up to twice. So you're trying to create groupings of symbols that come up on these dice in order to destroy other monsters. You play as a gigantic monster. You are occupying Tokyo, and it's sort of like King of the Hill where one monster occupies Tokyo and every other monster is attacking that monster. And then if that monster leaves, whoever was attacking that monster most recently occupies Tokyo instead. So you're trying to do as much damage as you can to the people outside of Tokyo, get to the point where you can't stand it anymore because they're damaging you, hop out and throw somebody else in the center and then take them down. So, you know, you're rolling dice. If you have claws on your dice, you can attack. If you have hearts, you can heal. If you have other symbols, you can do other things, gain points, etc. So you're trying to strategically roll dice and pick the ones that work for you. And I played this tournament, which was a huge tournament. It was multiple tables of people. I happened to be sitting with one of my friends and four 8-year-old kids, and they smoked us. They wiped the floor with us. This little girl who happened to win at our table and move and advance in the tournament, she kept going, "I don't know what's going on. I'm on fire today." It was adorable and also really fun. So that's for a 7-year-old, couldn't recommend that higher. The rules are simple, very clear. It's a giant monster that's on a standee, so you can kind of see this cool artwork of a monster, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really, really great game.
Awesome. Can't wait to check that out.
Yeah, man. I also got to play Space Cadets Dice Duel, which is a game that I had talked about a little bit because we had its designer on our show, Jeff Engelstein, and he designed it with his kids. And I'd played and own Space Cadets. Garnett, were you there that night when we played Space Cadets, or was that somebody else?
I don't believe so. It does not sound familiar.
It's the one where it's similar to Artemis, actually. It's where you're trying to pilot a space station, and each person has a different role to play.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. And Dice Duel is even more wacky because you're rolling dice to do all the things, and there's no turns. Both teams are rolling dice at the same time, and you're trying to get into position where you can shoot the other team before they get into position to shoot you. But everybody's moving at the same time. So as soon as you think, and you're plotting out your movement by rolling dice that have different arrows on them. So somebody's trying to plot out a movement to get into position while the other team is literally moving out of that position. So it's this crazy game of cat and mouse. It's really fun. I mean, short of playing video game Artemis, this is kind of like that experience, but with dice on a table. And we had a blast. It's very fatiguing, actually, because it keeps going and going. There are no turns. There's no downtime until you fire. And then everybody stops and you find out, you know, did I hit you or not? Good fun. Good fun. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up? It doesn't have to be board games before we wrap the show up. Garnett, was there anything else you had?
I'm going to wrap up for Motorsport Manager, okay, which is an awesome iOS title. It's by this one dude out of Europe. And if you are into everyone knows I'm super, super into racing, right? So if you're into super, super into racing, but especially Formula One racing, this game has perfectly replicated. So it is a manager style game. So you know what you're getting into. You're not driving the cars. It's perfectly replicated the experience of trying to run an F1 team from, you know, building out all of your facilities to hiring your engineering team and manufacturing your car, to going through the whole race day experience or the race weekend experience for all of your races of, you know, getting your cars out during qualifying, trying different setups, seeing which of your setups works the best for which of your drivers, trying to get them to qualify as high as possible. And then on race day, as they're running out there on the race, making decisions for them of, you know, when do I bring them into pit to change tires? How do I manage tire wear? How do I handle when to tell them to push, which will, of course, have the tires run off faster or conserve and hold their tires? Do I try to go with a two-stop approach or a three-stop approach? So all of these pieces that are going on behind the scenes in Formula One racing, done in a really slick iOS package. It's a premium game. It's like $5, and it is absolutely so worth the $5. It's really, really well done. It's called Motorsport Manager for iOS. I'm super fun. And thanks to John Davison for kicking it to me, because it's really good.
That sounds awesome. Anything else you wanted to bring up, Rich?
Well, I did want to mention there's a relatively new game that just came out. It's a independent sports game. It's called The Golf Club. It's on the Xbox One, the PS4, and on Steam. And it is the anti-Tiger Woods. Everybody has the same ability.
So you can win at it?
Oh. Everyone has
Tiger Burn.
Everyone's got the same abilities. So it's not about attributes or power-ups. And it's this open world where you and your friends can play together. It's got a really, really nicely done social integration where you can just start playing, and then all of a sudden you'll see a couple of your friends show up, and then the two or three or four of you will be playing golf at the same time. You can easily set up tours and tournaments. It doesn't look amazing, but that's not really the point. The point is to just have a really fun golf game where it's based upon your skill as opposed to just who can get the most power-ups. And it's completely user-generated content. There's a bunch of courses that they've obviously created that you can play, but there's this really, really interesting in-depth course creator. And all of the courses that get created are multiple platforms. So if you create one on your Xbox One, it can also be used on the PS4 and on Steam. And I've been playing it for a few days now, and I've just been amazed at how fun it is. Not just the game itself, learning how to play, and you're going to be terrible at first, and that's fine because it's golf. But also just how automatically just my friends start showing up, and then we're playing golf together, and we're setting up these tours and tournaments. And it's just a whole lot of fun. I mean, I've interviewed the creators on the Press Row podcast a couple of times, so I knew it was coming. But I really honestly did not think that a non-licensed independently created sports game would have the appeal that it has. But because they made it so easy to play with your friends, it's really, really been a surprise to me. So it's $35. So it's not AAA price, but it's also not cheap. Really highly recommended if you like golf video games at all.
Can I play as Phil Bickelson?
I think you're basically, I don't even think you get to name your guy. You just get to be whatever your avatar is.
Mick Filson?
Yeah. I just like him because he's left-handed. Anywho, so that's gonna do it for this episode. Although I would urge everybody to stick around. We're gonna end with a parting gift, and we'll recommend something that doesn't have anything to do with gaming right at the end of the show. But I want to thank Rich Grisham for hanging out with us. Really fun to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Tell the people where they can see your stuff.
Sure. I produce the Press Row podcast, which is a sports video game podcast. Every couple of weeks, we have myself and then Owen Good from Kotaku, Kat Bailey from US Gamer, Brian Weedai from Pasta Padre, TJ Larriman from That Sports Gamer, Chris Shannon from Operation Sports, and Sumit Sarkar from Polygon. Every 2 weeks, we talk about what is happening in the world of sports gaming. And then every other week in between, we'll usually bring on developers or pundits or something. Like last week we had, this past week was our Madden 15 review. The week before that, we talked to the guys who make Madden. Upcoming this week are the guys who are making NBA 2K15. We're having them on the show. So that's the Press Row podcast, and that's distributed by Operation Sports. And I'm also on a show called The Dodcast, which is distributed by Dodd Scientifics, a new website. No ad independent subscriber based website run by Pete Dodd. So I'm on there as well. So come hang out. Thanks.
Very cool. And I have to give huge thanks to my friend Garnet Lee for jumping in here at the last minute when Christian was pulled away. You are the best. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Glad to. Glad
how
to.
About, How about pimping some of your stuff? What can the people go listen to or check out?
I think if you're listening to this podcast, you found the best way to listen to me. This is where I humbly, hat in hand, tell the audience who have been super supportive and awesome that I wish I had an update for you on Garnet on Games. The reality is that the good news for me has been that I have two very, very hot job prospects that have been taking a significant amount of time. Both of them have had big interview and screening processes to them. Matter of fact, last week I was in fact out of town to do an interview cycle with one of them. And then next week, or actually this week, soon as tomorrow, I'm going to be back out of town to go do a long interview cycle on another opportunity. And awesome. So time has been getting chewed up, and I actually, I really have started even processing the calls and everything for the most recent show. So what I may do, I just don't know how it's gonna work out. And also, as far as John and Garnet goes, John has a new position, and I don't know what's gonna happen with that. I kind of suspect that it was its summer of love.
No.
Yeah, sorry, but I won't pull the plug on Garnet on Games without at least doing some sort of, wrap-up show, because, man, everyone in the audience has been unbelievably amazing. Unbelievably amazing.
Well,
so, you love know, you guys, and I would love to do more stuff, and I'll try to do more stuff. I'm on bonus round for the next 4 weeks, starting yesterday. We did bonus round. That was kind of fun.
Check that out. And you always have a home here. Anytime you want to stop by, we love having you. And I, again, can't thank you enough for jumping at the last minute. We are crossing our fingers and wishing you the best of luck for all these awesome jobs and hope. And I know that good things are happening very soon.
Yeah, the tough part for everyone listening is that at some point in the last few weeks, I looked at bank accounts and stuff and realized that I had to really, I had to get more serious about the way I was looking for a job than as I had been up to this point.
I hate looking at bank accounts. It's the worst.
Me too. Yikes.
As far as my stuff, I hope guys check out the / Filmcast as we are ramping back into episodes there. And we have Concerns, which is the new show I'm doing with Anthony Carboni. If you haven't heard about that or haven't had a chance to check it out, please do. The feedback we're getting is really great. It's a very different kind of show. I think if you listen to this, you'll like it, but it is a comedy show talking about interesting topics. So trying to make you think and make you laugh. That's at wehaveconcerns.com. We just launched a Patreon to keep that show going. So I appreciate any support, spreading the word of the show or any support you can lend would be very grateful for. Wehaveconcerns.com. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode. But before we go, our last little parting gift. Rich, got a recommendation as a parting gift for the peeps?
Sure do. One of my favorite types of books to read are oral histories, where a particular subject, they basically, instead of creating a narrative, they just talk to a lot of people and structure the narrative around that. And two of my favorite ones that I've read in the last couple of years, they're not brand new or by any stretch, but really good. One is called Those Guys Have All the Fun, which is basically the history of ESPN, which is fascinating whether you like sports or not. It's just fascinating to see how that came together and has become this massive enterprise that it is today. And the other one is called Live from New York, which is the tale of Saturday Night Live, which huge SNL fan. And it's just fascinating to read. Wonderful, great, just not even so much behind the scenes, just to hear the stories and to, again, you watch a show like Saturday Night Live, you think so much is just put together and planned and executed, and you realize how much, what happens to make that show happen. It's fascinating. So those are two highly recommended books that I've recently read, and they're just great fun to read.
Awesome. How about you, Garnet? Parting gift?
So I had to come up with this very quickly again because I was sort of grasping. But actually, it works out great because right now, starting today, available in your new September Netflix editions, all 7 seasons of Californication.
Oh, yeah. You're a big fan of that show, aren't you?
I am. I find it highly entertaining. You don't like it?
No, I think I've watched maybe 3 episodes and it didn't really catch me. So I don't know if I give it a fair shake, but yeah, it didn't really grab me.
I find it absolutely, I mean, it is gross and hilarious and awful and fun at the same time. And yeah, it's awesome. it's a great foil to any of the other serious stuff you might be watching simultaneously.
Very cool. And I have one that is maybe more location specific, but I had the great opportunity to see a South Coast Reps production of The Tempest this week, which is directed by Teller from Penn and Teller. And it blew my friggin' mind. It is so darn good. And I understand that they're touring it, so maybe it'll come to your city, but you should check it out. If you're in the LA area, do not miss it. Yes, it's Shakespeare. Yes, that can be intimidating to people or boring. I guarantee you, you will not be bored. I guarantee you, you will be able to follow along this story. It is amazing. Tempest is the story of a guy who uses magic to influence the life of his daughter, et cetera, et cetera. And in the hands of Teller, he really uses magic. It's this combination of a live stage magic show with Shakespeare, and it couldn't be more enthralling, magical, and spectacular. It is one of the best productions of Shakespeare I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot. So check that out if you get a chance. And thanks for sticking around. Thanks for hanging out with us on your Labor Day. If you were in the live chat room, we really appreciate it, and everybody who called in. We'll be back next Monday at 11 Pacific time if you want to try to hang out with us. Then you can always do that at 5by5.tv/live. Until that time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.